It's the Barry Pod on 99.3 thevine.com.
This is the Barry Pod, recorded February 12th, 2024. And this time in the pod, Supervisor Candidate Peter Mott. Welcome.
Thank you, Barry. Happy to be here.
We're continuing our effort to talk with all of the candidates for supervisor, and you are running in District 4, and like we do in forums, I'll give you a chance for sort of an opening statement, a general look at why you've decided to run.
Thank you very much. Well, I appreciate being here. I've decided to run for supervisor in District 4 for a number of different reasons. First of all, having served on the city council here, on the planning commission, on Napa Sanitation District, among others, you know, 12 or 13 different committees and commissions, I think I have the experience that the county needs, particularly with the election 2 years ago with two freshmen, now I guess sophomore supervisors in Ann Cottrell and Joel Gallagher. Some of the things that I think we're losing, certainly with Ryan Gregory and Alfredo Pedroza leaving, is a little bit of that historical knowledge, a little bit of that that focus, I think, on government that I bring to the table. So that's a big part of it. The second thing is some of the issues I think we're facing within the county that I think are of particular importance, and I'm trying to bring to the discussion regarding fire safety, mitigation and maintenance, regarding infrastructure investment, and some of the homeless services programs that I think are lacking here. Very interested in focusing on. I've been talking a lot about these issues, and so that's kind of some of the direction and some of the decision making.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about fire suppression, prevention, mitigation. There's a lot of different words. We're all talking about the same thing, trying to keep fires from getting started, and if they do, reduce the intensity, right? That's the goal. The supervisors forum that the vintners and grape growers held a few weeks ago at Copia led to a moment where my ears kind of perked up, because you were one of the few people on that dais who actually had a concrete proposal about something. That's kind of rare in campaigning. Once in a while, somebody says, I want to do this with the budget or something, and you did that, and I kind of went, well, that's good. There's something on the table to discuss. And that proposal was to use 3% of the county's general fund toward these purposes. Talk about that a little more. Elaborate on what you're thinking and why that's a good idea.
Yeah, happy to do that. And I have a couple different issues that I'm really pushing in this campaign that I call solutions, right, and not just rhetoric. The 3% set aside on the general fund, and again, we're only talking about general fund dollars, so health and human services money that comes through from the state is really a pass-through. It's about $400 million. You know, we're not talking about that pot of funding. It's just a discretionary money that's with the county. It's a little over, it's about $2.5 million. I'm sorry, $250 million. The issue I see out there in terms of fire mitigation and safety, and again, my the fourth district here that I'm running for runs all the way up Lake Berryessa, all the east side. So this, you know, the fire issues are really pertinent out there, and as we've seen in 2017 and 2020. We've got a great crew at CAL FIRE and with our volunteer stations, really a lot of men and women working awful hard to protect us. And we're fortunate because we have a new funding source coming in from the federal government. But there's two separate pots that we need to talk about. The first one is mitigation and planning. That's all can be taken care of with this new, and that's what's been done for the most part over the last few years, even with the fire safe councils. So that's brand new work. So that's cutting in new fire lines, trimming back trees in some respects, or taking out trees. So that's all money that's been somewhat funded, only $3 to $5 to $8 million, not significantly. But now we're looking at a federal grant of $35.5 million, which the county is going to match 50%, giving us a $50 million pot to do mitigation work. Now, again, the difference is we're not allowed to, you know, according to what the feds have stated and given us this grant, we're not allowed to do any maintenance work with that money. So we're talking about $50 million of mitigation work over a few years that we'll use to really make a difference out there. Again, we talk about cutting, new fire roads and whatever it's going to do, brakes is what I'm trying to think of. Then from there, we've got this all this work being done, and we don't have any money to do the maintenance work. So the ongoing work that needs to be done, and I try to use the example of your front yard. If you get it landscaped or done beautifully, you don't just let it go after that. You need to take care of it. And so that's what we need to do with this mitigation work. We need maintenance money set aside. So I've looked at the budget and a little bit looked over the past budgets in terms of some of these funding choices that the county has, what you would call discretionary funding for different decision packages. It might be paving roads here. It might be adding staff here. Those are always decision packages that you make at, excuse me, where you go through the budget process. I've been through that process numerous times on the city council, and then I run my own small business, and so we're always going through our own budget cycles. So I'm asking the board to set aside 3% of the general fund until they find another revenue source to do the maintenance work. So we saw the measure fail for a half-cent sales tax to do this maintenance work that was at the last election. And so here we are 2 years later, and we haven't gotten anywhere. They're not doing any maintenance work. It's not in the budget. It's a discretionary thing. So right now it goes up and down and up and down, and it's one of the first things they cut. That's what's happened in the last couple of years. So again, my goal is to make that dedicated. That should be 3%. That's roughly $8 million a year right now out of the current budget. That would be set aside just for that maintenance work on an ongoing basis, and hopefully with some funding behind it that goes into a reserve fund, so that on bad years that would still be there.
Mm-hmm. Not your opponent in District 4, but another supervisor candidate on this topic suggested that kind of proposal is welfare for property owners, and that private property owners should be responsible for cleaning the forest, as some people have put it. This kind of fire load issue, fuel load issue. And there's probably some folks who would agree with that approach, because that was what we heard with the flood project all those years ago. If this is benefiting private property owners, why don't they pay for it? How do you respond to that?
Well, it's not just private property. If you saw, all of us saw the fires come down in 2017 and 2020, they weren't selective to just property owners. And those fires affect all of us. They affected us in the city in terms of our businesses, in terms of our economy. They affected the county. There's still such an emotional aspect to it when you go up around the Silverado and the Highlands areas where folks, and even sort of Canyon Road, where folks never rebuilt. And they just left. And it's just heart-wrenching to see that kind of issue. So to suggest that this work could just be taken care of by the homeowners, well, that's just cleanup work. I mean, I don't know what that person was suggesting in terms of, maintenance work's going to get done. You don't spend $50 million just doing a little bit of work. This is significant work we get done out there. So I think that's... I just think it's short-sighted in terms of suggesting that would take care of the need.
You mentioned another solution to one of these major issues. I don't know what that is, but fill me in.
Yeah, one of them is one of the big projects that I've been working on is called a project called Safe Grounds. And Safe Grounds started out of Sacramento, and I went down to tour their facilities down there, where they have really focused on a secure area, that's focused on the homeless, our homeless folks and unhoused with mental health issues and with drug addiction issues. So one of the things I see out there is that we've done a pretty good job as a city and a county in addressing a large sector of the homeless population, but it's mostly those suffering from, you know, economic challenges. And so we have transitional housing that we've started on South Coombs and that we facilitated up off of Solano Avenue at the Motel 6 up there. But there's a whole sector of the population that just doesn't feel comfortable going inside four walls right away. It's not a, you know, rapid rehousing is the buzzword in the treatment of the unhoused and the homeless population. But there's a sector that aren't comfortable going into that four wall scenario. And those are the ones I think that most of us, when we talk about, or most of those folks, when I'm going door to door, say, oh, you got to do something about the homeless population. Well, they're really talking about, I think, those who are suffering from this mental illness issues or drug addiction issues that they, maybe we run into down the River Trail or down at Kennedy Park or underneath the bridges somewhere. So these folks, the Safe Grounds program is basically, again, a secure area where they'd be able to bring in their own tents or there's a section where you can park a vehicle if some folks are living out of their vehicles, or tents provided for them. And then they're able to stay there until they can either, I think there's limited time, I think it's a year up in Sacramento, but we could discuss all that, where they can stay there where they feel comfortable in that their own environment there. They don't have to be, it's a wet facility, they don't have to be drug-free or alcohol-free, but obviously they can't do that on site. And then there would be bathroom facilities, there would be shower facilities, you know, the basic human necessities that we're talking about for kind of the safety net for these folks. And then a staff member there or two or whatever it would be necessary to try to help them either into programs or into, again, that world of trying to get them up into traditional transitional housing, you know, that first step up the ladder. They've been very successful down there. They have about a 30% rate of moving people either into treatment or into the next step in housing, which is incredible to me. Otherwise, we're going to constantly play this, what I call homeless whack-a-mole. You know, we try to keep them down here and they're going to pop up over here. And it's just not a solution. And I believe we need to make these efforts to find solutions to these problems, whether they're real or imagined. But these are problems within our community that even if there's, you know, if we have one person die on the river from exposure, you know, I think we're failing that. I think we're failing ourselves in helping that yeah. population.
Let's move on to some other topic areas. And before we really focus on a specific topic, I have to do a little scene setter, I guess. Just this past Friday, there was a breaking news story that has to do with the current representative in District 4, Alfredo Pedroza. And while there are a lot of suggestions, insinuations in the story, there are not any real allegations or any charges or anything, so I want to make that clear. But what we learned from Napa Valley Register's reporting on this was that there have been 40 people or entities subpoenaed, and this has been going on for a couple of months, maybe 2.5-3 months, that folks locally have known about this investigation from the Department of Justice. Without going into too much detail, pretty shocking and surprising, and it really throws a certain factor into this District 4 race now that I certainly wasn't expecting, and I don't know if anybody was. First of all, what's your reaction to that story, and is there something that needs to be done, I guess I should say, in regard to what's being alleged there?
Well, I want to, just so we're clear on how that worked out, there were 40 different subpoenas, but there were three different issues that are in front of the county. So it wasn't all on focused on the one issue surrounding Mr. Pedroza and the Venitos. There was the airport situation with the county and Upper Valley Disposal and the dump up valley. Mm-hmm. It shocked all of us, I think. I was very surprised to see the federal government come in and get involved in this whole situation. Certainly, FPPC has been investigating this and is still investigating this at the moment. And, excuse me. But I think it's great that we have this kind of ability to have this outside look at these issues going on. So I believe in the process. I've always been a rules guy, and you know, you need to understand what you're doing and what the consequences are, whoever you are in this valley. And so I just want to see this process played out. I don't like innuendos and, you know, folks trying to connect some dots here that there are no dots to connect or see. You know, you're going to always see a lot of that kind of stuff, I think, floating around when there's, oh, well, maybe there's something here where, you know, there just isn't. It's just, you know, we have to wait till we get through the process with those subpoenas and we get back that information. Again, I know Alfredo Pedroza, and I know this is a challenge for him and his whole family in this process. But you know, that's what the process is for. And so, I'm really urging people to wait and not read too much into this until we see the results of that, of those subpoenas, the results of the FPPC investigation, and we go from there.
Very good. And just for the record, the FPPC investigation was specifically about the Venados transaction.
Correct.
The vineyard transaction, and didn't involve either of these other two scenarios that you mentioned, the Clover Flat and the airport.
That's correct.
Right?
Right.
Okay. Still kind of, in my mind, trying to put all the pieces together and understand it. So thanks.
It was very interesting to see him go after three different active sort of scenarios here in the valley, mm-hmm. that we've been talking about quite a while. Not so much the airport project, but certainly the other two, and then have them literally come in like, well, let's go on down to Napa and get a threefer. I mean, investigate everything while we're there. Yeah. It was just very strange, I think, for the federal government to kind of do it that way.
It's a very odd occurrence and out of the ordinary for sure, and we'll be talking more about it in the future here on the Vine for sure and in the Berry Pod. Let's get back to something more concrete, and one of the, no pun intended, watershed issues in this election is asking a candidate how you would have voted on the La Colleen project. For background, La Colleen was a vineyard development proposal that some had concerns about due to its location next to the reservoir and potential impact on city water supply. And the broader question, of course, goes way beyond just water supply or runoff issues, but into, you know, how much is too much in terms of vineyard development, particularly on hillsides. So the question comes back to, would you have voted to approve the La Colleen project as it was presented to the board?
Well, let me present a little background to it, because it wasn't even just approval of a La Colleen project. It was an erosion control appeal, right? So we have to kind of look at where this all came from and how it came about, because it changes the way the board could, the decision they could make and the grounds they could make that decision. You know, the La Colleen folks who brought that forward, you know, and I've obviously taken a look at that and gone back and look at the videos. You know, I think they spent 5 or 6 or 7 years bringing this project together, because that's how the valley is now. We have very, very high standards for developing vineyard projects here in the valley, almost more than anywhere else in terms of an ag product. And so that's great. I think that we have all agreed that that is, again, what we want. We've been through general plan processes and general plan updates to get to that world where you know, we agree that that's the process that we should do with this kind of development. That being said, I think the applicants came through and met with staff over and over and over, and did their EIR and answered questions, and got to the place where they had approval. They only had the erosion control plan, which was approved, and then was appealed by an out of town firm that came in and filed the appeal. I had some struggles with again, watershed protection of Lake Hennessy, because being a past city council member, I spent a lot of time working on, we're very fortunate to have two lakes that we are actually able to draw water from outside of the state water project and make sure that, you know, we really have a secure water supply. City of Napa has one of the best run water departments, I think, in Northern California. It's incredible. So I think I had some concerns there in terms of that weren't maybe addressed at that, you know, when I'm just looking at the application and what was approved. This was a 98-acre parcel that these applicants got down to about 20 acres of vineyards to try to get that approval process done. And, you know, they were local, you know, just folks that want a little bit of that dream that others have. This isn't Treasury Wine Estates or some large conglomerate. So I thought that whole that should have come back to the board. I would have asked for a continuance in that vote and come back to those members and say, those applicants and say, you know, here's the concerns regarding your the risk can you move the vineyard over to one side so we have less of a risk against I'm forgetting the name of the creek that runs down into Hennessy. But I don't think that overall, I don't think that was a project that was fairly looked at. So I think the process they took in terms of denying it was faulty. It's not that it wasn't legal, but I think that it was could have been handled differently in terms of that one issue, which really is in terms of erosion control, was the one issue that was supposed to be looked at. You know, not so much in terms of wildlife pathways through and some of those other issues. Again, I think it's very important that governing bodies focus on the issue in front of them and don't get, you know, start getting political into greater issues of an applicant or the valley. So I've likened it to Lucy pulling the football, you know, telling Charlie one more time that we're all good to go, come and kick it. Because I think it was, in the end, I think that it was poorly handled.
That having been said, it seems inevitable that every decision, every proposal and decisions that go with those proposals are going to be scrutinized at a level we've probably never seen before for a variety of reasons. There are people who adamantly believe that we shouldn't cut one more tree anywhere in the county for any purpose because of global warming, climate change. There are people who feel that hillside development in general is something we should not be doing because of a variety of issues environmentally that come to affect us. Do you think there a lot of candidates in the forum recently were talking about updating the general plan more frequently? Is that what needs to happen to head off these upcoming arguments over projects? And I'm sure there are many who have been in the pipeline for some years, like the one you just described.
No, that's what needs to happen to make sure that we have development and growth or no growth based on a community input and you know, where our community is at this point in time. You know, general plans and general plan updates generally only happen every 10 years. Your general plan is generally a 20-year general plan. So the important part of this, it's not necessarily we're going to head these things off or head off lawsuits. It's that during that process, we get a chance to look at all these on a grand scale, look at the whole valley in terms of the county part of it, and say, hey, what do we want as a valley? If you know, if the community says we want no hillside development, we establish a general plan that says that's the rule, then if it's been a long thought out process and lots of community input, then that's going to be the rule. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think we're still looking on a case by case basis of that. But I do agree issues like at the very end of Dan M. Roads, like the end of Soda Canyon, you know, should we be doing wineries out there or should we be doing any kind of visitor serving things that are going to have folks out there putting the rest of the folks at risk if there's a fire or trying to get off that mountaintop. And so I do think those are issues we need to look at that weren't in the last general plan that I think need to be updated. But I think the general plan is such an important document. You know, it really is the constitution of our valley, that's the most important thing in terms of selecting a member for this seat and who you vote for. That's one of the most important things in front of us, literally, is this general plan update and having a voice and in how our valley goes, where it goes from here.
I think we have time for one more question, and I'd like to circle back to where we started and a little bit talking about how you have served on the Napa City Council and have seen things from the city's perspective in the past, and now are looking to be a county representative. One of the issues that I laughed about the last time this popped up in the news, because I had seen it so many times, that the city and the county are now going to collaborate and cooperate on discussing physical space and the Carithers building and the old what's now going to be the old jail, and maybe there's a chance for the city and county to work together on facilities. And, you know, you're smiling too, because it's like, I've heard this song before. Same song,
I've seen five
verse.
City hall proposals over the last 20 years.
Right. I guess the first question is, why is this so difficult for the city and the county to actually make any progress on any of this? Because it's constantly discussed and it, meetings happen and nothing results. Why is it so difficult?
They're two distinct entities, and they really have their own agendas of things they need to accomplish. That being said, I do really believe, I mean, in the old days, you know, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, it was the county trying to step on the city constantly, or even the city of Marin Canyon was trying to form. Now I think the collaboration is certainly much better, and there's discussions about the different issues, housing issues, facility issues. But I do not agree that it's such a done deal that it'll be easy peasy to get, let's do a joint city hall, county administration building, something along those lines. The county's moved a lot of its facilities down into the South Campus, and so down by the DMV area. And so how they develop that and what they do with that, the importance of that matters. But then again, having something downtown in the heart of Napa in terms of facility, I think matters as well. So I don't, it never worked particularly well when I was on the council. I hope that there is a better collaboration. Napa Pike was an extremely good project that the city and the county collaborated on together that seemed to have agreement from both sides that it worked well. That's the kind of process we need. Normally we're talking about, two by twos from the county and the city trying to work on these issues. I know all the members of the city council, so be happy to work with any of them and respect them all. But it's nobody's given up very easily, one side or the other, if there's still some needs they have. And most of that has to do with the budget situation for both entities and the challenges they have. One will have money to maybe do some development while the other doesn't. The county's revenue stream is much more fixed because it comes from property taxes mostly, where the city's really is a sales tax, TOT tax. The TOT tax is such a big factor that one fire, one earthquake, one other, any really big bump in it can set it way back. And so I think those are the challenges. I would love to see the collaboration. I'm offering to open my arms to any of the city council members as a District 4 representative, but I don't think it's always going to be easy.
Candidate for supervisor in District 4, Peter Mott, let me give you a minute or so for a closing statement. Wrap it up.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you having me in here, Barry. This has been terrific. I've worked very hard to be, I think, the kind of candidate that District 4 needs. A big chunk of District 4 is in the city, and I understand the needs within the city that the county can affect, particularly health and human services issues that are out there. But I also have there's also a significant amount of District 4 out in the rural areas from Hagen Road to Hagen Road to Soda Canyon and on out to Berryessa, including the Highlands and Circle Oaks. So sanitation problems out in Circle Oaks, road problems everywhere. I bring the wealth of experience to not just focus on land use issues here, but all the rest of the issues that the county's involved with. This is a full-time job, and it takes a lot of background, and it takes a lot of experience to do the job. And so I ask for your vote to support me. Peter Mott is your supervisor for the 4th District in this election.
And that's the Barry Pod, recorded February 12th, 2024.
You're listening to The Barry Pod. tastings from Wine Country Live in the morning.
On 99.3, thevine.com.